MRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Shenandoah County takes one step closer to welcoming a data center, despite the opposition of some residents. Due to federal budget cuts, Bath Community Hospital is among more than a dozen rural hospitals in Virginia in danger of closing. And we explore the growing trend of IV infusions to boost energy and the risks. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, June 9th. Shenandoah County's Planning Commission has voted to approve the county's first data center, despite public opposition. The Daily News Record reports that the panel voted 6-1 to recommend the ordinance to the Board of Supervisors. More than two dozen residents signed up to speak at the meeting, most against the proposal. According to one estimate, more than one-third of Virginia's 36 rural hospitals, including Bath Community Hospital, are at risk of closing. These concerns are not new, but federal changes are raising alarm bells. Dean Mirshahi with VPM News reports.
Last week, Virginia's Joint Commission on Healthcare got a presentation on the financial condition of the state's rural hospitals. The study found that seven facilities are at, quote, highest risk of either financial distress or closure. One looming concern is the impact of H.R. 1, a federal law that's often referred to as the One Big Beautiful Bill. Estimates show that hospitals could lose out on more than $2 billion a year once all the law's provisions take effect. The commission asked its staff to review policy options that lawmakers can possibly use to offset any financial concerns for hospitals.
Dean Mirshahi reporting. Governor Abigail Spanberger vetoed a long-running effort to create a legal recreational marijuana market in Virginia. But as Miracle Max said about the man in black in The Princess Bride, perhaps the market is only mostly dead. Radio IQ's Brad Kuttner explains.
We have the shared priorities of wanting to have a legal framework for a recreational market that can make sense.
That's Governor Spanberger, perhaps ironically, at the state's newly opened forensics lab, speaking to conversations she called incredible and productive with lawmakers who hope to see a legal weed market in the Commonwealth and the state's budget. Democrats have been trying to get a recreational weed market passed since decriminalizing marijuana in 2020. Expectations were high, with Spanberger also being a Democrat, but she sent the market bill passed this year back to legislators with amendments they did not accept. However, they could still include a recreational market in the budget, with a deadline for that funding document at the end of the month. Delegate Paul Krizik, who led the market bill in the House, called recent talks promising.
She's been fair and knowledgeable, and we've made some great progress on a compromise. I'd say we're one big team on this effort.
And advocates like Chelsea Higgs Wise with Marijuana Justice were also optimistic.
When we talk about public health and public safety, we have to show our true commitment. And that means after 5 years since legalization, that this is the year that we make something happen.
If talks continue successfully, Virginia's legal weed market could get off the ground in the coming months. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
The future of voting rights in Virginia will be driven in part by the Readmission Act of 1870, also with Radio IQ, Michael Pope explains.
The year was 1870, and Virginia was under military occupation. In order to have members of Congress return to the Capitol, state officials agreed that they would not make up new felonies to disenfranchise black people. Here's ACLU lawyer Eden Heilman on the Readmission Act of 1870.
It acknowledges the fact that southern states are stripping black voting power by expanding the definition of felonies to include various things that were not considered felonies then. And so it basically said that Virginia cannot amend its constitution to disenfranchise anyone for a felony that is not currently a felony at common law right now. And that would be in 1870.
The ACLU successfully brought a case arguing many people should have the right to vote but are denied because they were convicted of a felony computer crime or as part of the war on drugs. Here's legal expert Rich Kelsey on implementing a law that's 156 years old.
The United States Constitution's even older than that. So someone did some great research and realized that Virginia was on the hook and that it was entirely unable to prevent people from voting for any other reason than the common law reasons that were set out by the Readmission Act.
State officials are still trying to figure out how to implement the court's ruling, including questions about whether people who are incarcerated for felony drug convictions should be able to vote while incarcerated. Michael Pope.
Virginia's first onshore wind farm is taking shape in Botetourt County, south of the Lexington area, and recently reached another milestone, also with Radio IQ. Mason Adams reports.
Construction is underway in Rocky Forge, a nearly 80-megawatt wind farm on North Mountain. A couple of ridges away, on Saturday, government officials and community boosters gathered with Apex Clean Energy and its contractors to sign a 254-foot wind turbine blade. It's a celebration of a milestone as the companies begin the process of erecting 13 wind turbines and mounting blades on them. It's taken 12 years to get to this point, since Apex first announced its plan to build the wind farm, and seven more since landowner Jerry Fraley began pursuing the idea in 2007.
I feel like I just opened up a big pit of coal, got it loaded, and it's on a railroad car, and I'm waiting on a check.
Fraley is a third-generation Wise County coal miner. In the 1960s, he began acquiring what turned out to be 10,000 acres of land in Botetourt. He negotiated with three previous energy companies before landing on Apex Clean Energy, based in Charlottesville. The project faced some local opposition, but was approved by the County Board of Supervisors and overcame three lawsuits to reach this point. Ken Young is CEO of Apex Clean Energy.
How do we make it work here? We're on top of a ridge. That creates a lot of expense. Can there be additional wind projects in Virginia? Yes, I believe so. The technology is so much better than when we started this development. For people that are against it, I think the answer is because of the benign wind regime and the expense of the projects, there's not going to be wind turbines everywhere.
Apex expects to finish construction of the wind farm and begin producing energy by the end of the year. Google will buy its power. In Gala, I'm Mason Adams.
It's wedding season across Virginia. That means bachelorette parties, rehearsal dinners, and sometimes IV infusions and energy shots for brides, grooms, and their guests. Even as some experts warn that the risks outweigh the benefits, WMRA's Christine Cuter reports.
It's been a little more than a month since Charlottesville's Drip Bar was temporarily shuttered after being raided by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the Virginia State Police. Though the reason for its closure isn't clear, other medical spas in the region continue to offer similar services. Intravenous delivery of commercially manufactured fluids infused with various vitamins, minerals, and electrolytes at the height of one of Central Virginia's busiest times of year, wedding season. Event planner Hannah Wilson estimates that 20% of her clients seek IV infusions before or after wedding festivities to feel better, look good, or recover.
I had a bride who wasn't feeling well at her rehearsal dinner, so the first thing we did before her hair and makeup, she got an IV that had some great mix tailored to her symptoms, and it was really wonderful. She felt great all day, was able to party till the end of the evening. I'm sure she slept very well that night. It really made a huge difference in how she experienced her rehearsal dinner to how she experienced her wedding day.
Those getting IVs are also careful where they get stuck.
We get creative with the healthcare professionals. So I did have one bride that got an IV in her foot because her dress would cover it, her shoes would cover it, but she was wearing a strapless gown and didn't want any marks on her arms for her photos.
But it's not just for wedding parties. IV infusions are marketed as beauty enhancers and immune system boosters, ways to up athletic performance, even improve longevity. They can even be a way to build bonds, said event planner and designer Dickie Morris of Just a Little Ditty.
We had a client who was getting married in Charleston and had a big wedding party. And so before her wedding, and then actually she ended up doing it after her wedding too, they had, you know, IVs set up in a hotel room and people would come and get one, sign up for them. Obviously, like, health and recovery and all those things are super important to how people are feeling on their wedding days. Everyone approaches it differently. So whether it's going for a walk in the morning or going and getting an IV or massage, I do think people are getting creative with how they're spending their time, but also, you know, how are they gathering beforehand? They are doing things together. And so I think there can be an element of community.
Those who take a scientific approach to health claims aren't as convinced. Recently retired University of Virginia nursing professor Terry Yost, a UVA health nurse practitioner, says people's perception of benefit is based on anecdotes, not data.
There is not evidence to support claims that it makes you more refreshed, that it makes you look healthier, that it makes you recover faster. Whatever your body does not need, your body will excrete and get rid of. So it's not like you're getting extra. IV therapy comes with risks. Anytime you puncture the skin, there's a risk of infection. You can get phlebitis in the vein. There's risk of air embolism if people are not adequately trained on performing IV therapy. medically speaking and from an evidence-based perspective, evidence does not outweigh the risks.
The FDA previously sounded the alarm about drug products being compounded or mixed under unsanitary conditions at IV hydration clinics elsewhere in the country. But America's consumer wellness market is worth $500 billion a year and growing. According to a McKinsey report, wellness-related spending is expected to top $9.8 trillion by 2029, according to the Global Wellness Institute. The number of medical spas offering IV therapy nearly doubled between 2018 and 2023. While Virginia has yet to pass specific laws regulating them, most spas tout having registered nurses credentialed to do physical assessments and dose and titrate the bags. One nurse, who asked that we not use her name, was a regular at Charlottesville's Drip Bar until it closed. She used funds in her health savings account to pay for the infusions.
I went there like every week for my shot, and it worked perfectly for me. My thing was like, I was just so tired, especially when I was doing rotating like 6 week on, 6 week off. It was really hard, like my body not really catching up. I felt such a big difference. Like I was focused more, I had energy. That brain fog that I used to have, now I was really much alert and just, you know, doing my thing.
Yost, though, says most people's immune systems don't need any extra help.
We have had the ability to fight off infection since the inception of humans, millions of years. We've evolved as a species despite the fact that we've only had commercial use of antibiotics for roughly 75 years. We have immune systems and it doesn't require a special boost of vitamin C or echinacea. There's just this whole wellness culture right now. It's an incredible money-making business. These companies do an excellent job of convincing people that they need these things.
Earlier this year, the American Medical Association called on state governments to more vigorously regulate medical spas. For now, Virginia's boards of medicine and nursing require these businesses to partner with or employ an advanced practice provider able to write prescriptions and ensure that only licensed healthcare professionals compound and administer IVs. For WMRA News, I'm Christine Cuter.
We've posted photos and links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. Governor Abigail Spanberger, members of her cabinet, and future staff cut the ribbon on a new state forensics lab on Monday. The governor talked about the need for the new $189 million facility that had been in development for about 15 years.
There are people working day in and day out to provide extraordinary scientific research that helps solve crimes, identify victims of crime, and really give answers to families.
The new building, located just north of Richmond, will house the Virginia Department of Forensic Science and the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner. Finally today, sometimes it feels like there is not much good environmental news these days, but here in Virginia, there's a small story of survival and hope. Radio IQ's Sandy Hausman reports from Sussex County, where an endangered bird is coming back.
About 150 years before the American Revolution, settlers arriving on our shores found an amazing sight. 90 million acres of pine forest, stretching from what's now southeastern Virginia to Florida and Texas. Those trees would become an engine for the British Navy, supplying pitch to seal boat hulls and tar to grease wagon axles. Scientist Brian Van Eerden with the Nature Conservancy says farmers cut down more trees to grow crops, and another animal kept longleaf pines from coming back.
Feral hogs that were throughout the coastal plain in 1700s, 1800s, they foraged heavily on the seeds of longleaf pine and seedlings of longleaf pine, and then removal of fire. Longleaf pine is a species that is designed to thrive and survive in the environment of fire. If you take that away, other species like loblolly pine will outcompete longleaf. Over the course of 400 years, that forest went down to just 200 trees that we could account for.
The destruction took a toll on species that depended on longleaf pines, like the red cockaded woodpecker. A cockade was a ribbon rosette that military men wore on their hats. These small birds are speckled with black and white feathers, but the males have a dash of red on their heads. They're also known for their industrious ways. Teams of woodpeckers create cavities in trees over months or years, providing a safe space for nesting. As the forest declined, so did the birds, their numbers falling to about 200 after Hurricane Hugo hit. Again, Brian Van Eerden with the Nature Conservancy.
The Francis Marion National Forest had the largest population of red-cockaded woodpeckers range-wide. And then the hurricane came through and just leveled the forest. And then they're exposed to the elements, and they're also exposed to predation. So getting birds into cavities is really important for population stability and growth.
That's when scientists began creating cavities in trees to house red-cockaded woodpeckers.
That's a matter of a human establishing an RCW cavity in the course of a couple of hours, which is a lot shorter than an RCW. It could take 2 years for an RCW, a group of RCWs, to excavate a cavity.
And the birds caught one other lucky break when the largest producer of timber in the U.S., International Paper, decided to sell their land in Virginia. That allowed the Nature Conservancy to buy 5,000 acres. Now they're doing controlled burns, thinning out some loblolly pines, planting longleaves, so more sun can reach the forest floor. As a diversity of plants returned, more insects appeared. Ants, beetles, caterpillars, cockroaches, and spiders. A buffet for the birds nesting above. Today, ornithologist Chance Hines scales trees in the Piney Grove Preserve in Sussex County between Richmond and Hampton Roads. He gently removes baby birds from their nests so he can weigh them and attach tiny leg bands for future identification. The parents are none too happy, but they quickly return to feed their babies once Hines has put them back.
They're still pretty pink. They don't have a lot of feathers protruding, just starting to come out of the tail, which is what happens on day six.
The babies struggle against the intruder, sometimes falling asleep, exhausted, in his hands. But they don't seem to be harmed in any way, and Hines predicts a record number of nestlings, more than 50, will survive. Already, the Center for Conservation Biology at William & Mary counts about 150 birds in the area, up from 8 25 years ago. I'm Sandy Houseman.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.